Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about visualization, how to visualize our goals so that we know where we're headed, so that we know what we're doing, so that we know, well, what we want, really. And that's what we usually do. But let's talk about it specifically so that we really make a definite, defined effort to visualize our goals and then to work towards them. So what kind of goals do we need to visualize as leaders? What do we need to visualize within our context? Our context of mediation, dispute resolution, alternative dispute resolution, yes, consensus building, maybe a workshop, maybe a seminar, yes. What kind of goals do we need to visualize? This is true. Thank you all for being here. I think the first one I'm going to be talking about is how to define success. Because the first thing we need to know is what success looks like so that when we've got it, we know. So that when we've got it, we go, yeah, that's it. We've reached our goal. This is what we visualized as success. A lot of folks are talking about timing, the timing constraints that might be on this particular project, right? Yes, this is true too. On this show, remember, we call everybody who had the good sense to bring us in the employer. It's a generic term. It does not necessarily designate the actual relationship. So, the employer is a generic term for whoever it is that brought us in. Could be a person, could be a board, could be an organization. Whoever it is that, you know, it could be a group of people. I mean, the board and the organization or not. But it could be a group of people, could be an individual, whoever. But whoever brought us in, we're going to call them the employer. So we need to visualize the employer goals when they tell them to us so that we know we're on the same page, right? Yeah. How about participant goals? We need to visualize a good group dynamic. We need to visualize a strong group dynamic that can really get someplace. And perhaps we need to visualize what to do about outsiders or opposition, right? Which leads us to the question of how to handle the media. Because if there's truly opposition and outsiders and like that, then the media is oftentimes interested. And that's kind of a trick. It's kind of complicated to handle the media. So we're going to figure out how to do that, right? Yeah. And let's talk about all of these things within our context of practicality and not just theory, right? Yeah. So let's get started. Well, our first goal is, because it's really an entry point, is we're going to define success. What does success look like? How will we know when we have it? Well, because this is what success looks like, right? Right. Now, the question is, yes, thank you. A lot of folks are asking, if this is the basic question that we have to visualize, who defines success? Because it might not be just us. And we have to get together on this definition because we need to really think about what it is that is our core, what it is that we're going to define as our main success. Yes, This is true. Muhammad and others are saying that you can't work towards something that you don't understand. So you need to define it. Now, who's going to define it? Now, maybe we as leader do, and we certainly help to define success. Yeah, we help. We have experience. We are dealing with all the various parties, and we understand what needs to be done. So we help define success, which means that we must first visualize what we're going to recommend. Visualize what we're going to say we're going to work towards, right? Yeah. So we're going to visualize what we need to do, and then we're going to define it for others so they understand where it is we're going, what it is we're working towards. If you can't tell it to someone, if you can't make it clear what success looks like, then you haven't defined it. Yeah, and you haven't visualized it fully. Yes, you should be able to say, yes, this is what we're doing. This is how we're going to handle this. This is what needs to be done, right? And this is how we're going to progress. This is the process. And then go forward from there. And yes, we are going to talk about the fact that it is indeed a flexible definition. A flexible definition. Because if it's not, then you're going to get all tied up in, well, this is what we said at the beginning, but it's not working out. Well, we worked that into our visualization. We worked that into our definition. That as we go along, as we get smarter, as we get more experienced, as we know things and different people have input, the definition of success may actually change or at least be modified, right? Right. Yeah. And so what you start out with might not be exactly what you end up with, but it's not because you didn't have success. It's because as you got into it, you understood more about what success really was, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it might be us. We certainly help. We certainly help the parties come together. We certainly lead them towards the middle so there can be consensus. A lot of times it's the employer that defines success, right? Because they have a reason for bringing you in. Mm-hmm. Remember, it's a generic term. They have a reason for bringing you in. They have a reason for starting this group. They have a reason for wanting a certain outcome, and that's their goal. They'll define success if you reach whatever outcome it is that they've predetermined. But they also have to be trained. They also have to understand that sometimes what they've predetermined is their goal, what success looks like in an office, right? Not away from the actual practicalities of it. Sometimes that's not what success actually looks like. Or sometimes it's doable but with some modification, and that's the key to it, right? Yes, it needs to be flexible. Our definition needs to be flexible, and so does the employer's. Mm-hmm. Who else can define success? Yes, thank you. A lot of people are saying we do. The group defines success. It's a matter of, well, getting together and thinking about what the consequences for each path will be and how we can perhaps blend them together to make a much better whole. Yes, we as participants, we as a group, we might even vote, depending on if you're doing it in a democratic manner. Pardon me, took a sip of water. But we're definitely going to talk about it. We're definitely going to negotiate. We're definitely going to reach consensus and a workable, successful outcome. Yeah, I see a lot of groups and they get kind of a, what they call a statement of intent sometimes. They get a theoretical outcome. But it's not workable. There's no plan on how to implement it. That's nice. But when we get done, we want to have really accomplished something. So the group gets together. And oftentimes, it may not just be them getting together. The group gets together to help define success with the leader and with the employer, right? And with maybe outsiders. who have some influence, right? Yeah. This is a good point, too. Hussein and others are saying that sometimes circumstances define success. Sometimes circumstances define success. And that's true, too. Sometimes something happens during the process, during the negotiation, during the time period, where something, the circumstances have changed. The most common one being funding. The money has changed, usually less, but it could be more. We could be able to do more, right? And so that something outside of our control has changed, but we need to acknowledge it, and we need to kind of figure it into our visualization, right? Yes, and that's very important to understand. Things are in motion. None of this stuff is a stagnant act. And because things are in motion, well, you've got all kinds of moving parts, which means that sometimes circumstances have a real bearing on whether or not, well, how much of the success that we defined are we going to be able to do now? Because we have steps, right? And we might be able to go forward to the first level, and then we're going to have to rethink it and get more funding, or rethink it and get more expertise, or whatever it is that we need, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the time runs out. That's an outside circumstance. Or the time gets pushed forward, right? Yeah, sometimes that happens too. Which leads us to timing constraints is one of the things we need to visualize and think about. The first thing to know about a timing constraint, about a deadline, which is timing constraints, a deadline. The first thing to know about a deadline, yes, thank you, you're all going, what's a timing constraint? Well, it's a deadline. The first thing to know is whether it's an actual deadline or it's negotiable. Sometimes employers and other folk think that it's good to set a short timeline because it'll make you work faster. It's a theory, right? Well, if you have to do it in 2 weeks, you'll get it done. Otherwise, it's going to take 2 months. Sometimes that actually works. It kind of depends on a variety of factors, not the least of which the control the employer has over your participants. And sometimes they just can kind of set an arbitrary timeline, but it's not actual. Yes, it's something that could be negotiated. You could need more time and get it. So why? An actual deadline is something that's set in the rules, by law, so to speak. You must file your petitions to get on the ballot by a certain date. Well, that's an actual timeline if you want to get something to be voted on by the citizenry. Yet that you have a certain date by which you must comply. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So an actual one, I suppose that's true. People are saying even on an actual one, you could apply for an extension sometimes, but not on something like voting because there's a day when everybody goes to the polls or a day when everybody has to send in their ballot sometimes. In some states, we don't actually physically go and vote. We send it in, but it's the same concept. It's got a drop-dead day. So it's very important to know if it's real or we can get more time. Mm-hmm. I'm not in favor of always as a time, because then you don't get the focus. I'm not big on fake timelines, but sometimes you do need to set a time by which this is due so that we can go forward in a reasonable manner, right? Right. Mm-hmm. People are asking about an actual timeline, as in we put it out. It's actually a physical, well, it's physical on a piece of paper, but it's actually dates by which things must be done. Yes and no. It takes some time to do that. It takes some negotiation. That might be a good thing because it might get everybody to know each other and feel comfortable working together, and it's a long-term project. Or it might be kind of a thing that keeps us all doing exactly the same thing when we wanted to have more imagination. We want to have more input. We want to have more expertise. So some issues don't need a timeline. They're not that complicated. But if you feel that it will keep the process going, then yes. If you get overly flexible with the timeline dates, your timeline will be meaningless, though. So be careful about choosing dates that give enough space so that the project, that step, can be completed successfully and people don't have to ask for more time. Do you see the picture? Yeah. If you keep saying okay to more time, that's not much of a timeline now, is it? It's been violated. If you keep saying no, then we're not going to get anywhere. So be careful if you set an actual timeline. It's kind of a reputation thing, too. Yes, this is true. Lee and others are saying you estimate the amount of time needed. I tend to estimate big because it's been my experience that people get rid of a timeline, they get rid of their project faster. Well, they're mighty happy, see? And then others look to them and they go, oh, we got to hurry it up. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you ask me how to estimate the amount of time needed, the complexity, the abilities of your participants, maybe how many times you're meeting, right? I usually estimate kind of big because I don't want to have to breach the timeline and say, oh, well, okay, just get it when you got it. I've seen people keep it rather strictly. The idea of the timings is to keep track of the process and keep track of the participants is the main thing to know about it. The main idea is to keep track of what's going on so we can go forward. So that's timing constraint. How about employer goals? Those are things that we need to visualize, right? Yeah. We need to understand, we as a leader, need to understand what on earth it is that the employer wants. Because sometimes they're not stating it very clearly, or sometimes they're not sure what exactly it is that they want. Ooh, that's not so good. You want to be able to look at it and say, look, this is what you're telling me, but I don't understand. Let's define what success looks like. When we get all done, what would you like to see? Sometimes that's hard. Sometimes they don't know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the employer has been given an idea of what needs to be done, but they don't have it really filled out in their mind. Or maybe they saw the idea being done someplace else, and it seemed like, wow, that would be good, but it was a little bit of a hasty decision, and they haven't quite figured out how it's going to work in this situation with this group, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that needs to be defined is the employer's definition of success. And that's very important because how are you going to know when you've reached it if you don't allow them to work it out? You might have to take some time and we have consensus and negotiation with the employer so that we all understand where it is that we're going and what success looks like. Mm-hmm. Yes. This is true, too. Lee and others are saying that they also need to understand the need for flexibility. Yes. Sometimes you tell people, you help people to understand what they want, right? But when you get into it, it's nuanced. It's not exactly what they said they wanted. But that's the way it is in the real world. And they have to accept that, at least for now. So you have to make your employer understand that you are working on it, the process has to be worked through, and it needs to be flexible. There may be some twists and turns. It's going to be all right. We're going to get to the same goal, but we have to be some flexible. Mm-hmm. Yes, employer visualization is sufficient funding. Excellent, yes. They need to understand that it's going to cost some money and some time, which costs money, right? So they need to understand the need for flexibility. a lot of times an employer will ask me about how much do I think it should cost to get to the successful outcome. Well, we have to make an estimate. I usually estimate big for cost. I usually estimate big for time, because if you come in under budget and within the in less time, they're going to think you're a genius, and that's fabulous for your reputation. Genius is an excellent reputation, right? So they need to give funding and sufficient support, and think biggish for the support, because then you won't have to go back for more, is my advice. Mm-hmm. Yes. Michelle and others are talking about giving the employer the power to effectuate the goals. Yes-ish. They need the power to assist you as leader in effectuating the goals, but not to kind of butt in. I try to get it so that they get sent for if I need them, but not just out of curiosity. Does that make sense? Yeah. Not just because, but because we are really working on it, right? Yeah. So they have the power to effectuate the goals, but what they really need to do, since you're the leader and you are working on this very hard on their behalf, and they're busy people, you need to have goals set out, but you also need to have the flexibility to have your power to enforce the goals, to enforce, well, we're going to head for civility rules, right now. Because it's one of the reasons ways to reach the goals. Let's talk about group dynamic, and then let's talk about the civility rules. Let's talk about the civility rules first, because they impact the group dynamic. Because people are asking all kinds of questions about how do you get the employer to do this. The answer is right up front and first. Before you take on the project, you need to know that the employer's got your back. I suppose that's an Americanism, and this is, of course, a global show, but it means that if you run into some difficulty with a participant, an outsider, the media, whoever it is, the employer is going to back you, is going to take responsibility, is going to say, no, she's doing it right. She's a fabulous leader. Pardon me. And which is why you keep the employer in the loop, so that they understand what's coming. They understand what's about to be done, right? Right. And one of the ways that we act always is we act civil. We call it the civility rules recipe for peace. Now, yes, a lot of you have been here before, and you've heard about the civility rules, but there's some new people too. And at the very core, the civility rules say we will not be rude to one another. And you must announce the civility rules immediately. I announce the first day. And enforce fairly, consistently, and immediately. Right? Immediately. Now, you can't wait until things get out of hand. And then go, you know those civility rules? Now we're going to enforce them. Fairly, so that you don't take sides. And consistently, even if it takes 243 mentions of the civility rules and you kind of having to wave your hands, right? Yeah. And because the civility rules are so important, we, as leader and participant, because we're both, right, we're part of the team, and we have an employer, too, that sometimes we don't necessarily disagree with so completely, the civility rules apply to us. The leader is the model of the civility rules. The leader is the model of the civility rules. Very important to understand. You can't ask people to do something that you yourself do not do. You must be civil at all times, even if somebody's being a wee bit annoying. We're going to keep our civility. Mm-hmm. Yes, that comes later down the line. We're going to keep our enthusiasm, too. Good point. Because we're also models of enthusiasm. If our team, if our participants, if our leader, if whoever's on our team, our experts, whatever, if they see that we have lost enthusiasm and we don't think this is going to work, well, they're going to get discouraged and lose enthusiasm, too, right? Right. If you've truly lost enthusiasm and you truly can't do this anymore, I think you should recuse yourself. I think you should give it somebody else a chance to lead the group, not you, because it's just discouraging. You've lost enthusiasm, and it shows. And that's the ticket. It shows. Your participants know. Your employer knows. The outside world knows. It shows. It shows that you've lost interest. You've lost enthusiasm. Give it up. So, both the world, especially the civility rules, which is why we talked about it in the context of the employer and the group dynamic, the civility rules can be announced. They can be talked about. You can insist on that they should be enforced. But you need some power to do so with some people. Some people are naturally more convivial than others. But a lot of times you have somebody who is quite not with the program. They're a bully, for example. And you need to have the employer have given you power to do something about that. And not just say something like, that's not nice and it's against the civility rules. They know it's not nice and it's against the civility rules. The employer must back you, and you must have the right, the power to enforce the civility rules. You can't be a member of this group, for example. Which is I can effectuate your employment, because I do a lot of corporate, and people are the same level in the group, same level of authority, same level of supervisor or whatever. And it's important to be in the group. They can't be thrown out. It means that if you're going to get thrown out, then you can't keep your level of employment, because people who are that level of employment have to go to this group. Yeah. So it's very important that the boss, so to speak, backs you. Now, if they're very far away, the boss, the employer, and they still need to give you that power, I like it in writing. I was going to say they can Skype in. I like them to actually come and enforce and explain that, yeah, that is not cool. I like to be able to bring the employer in if I get stuck. And we don't consider it getting stuck. We consider it making the process move more efficiently. It's all a matter of marketing perspective, right? Yes. So quite a few people are asking, what happens if you breach the civility model? What happens if you breach the civility model? Somebody really pushes your buttons and you become uncivil. And you realize it, because you will, the minute you do it. You just lost your cool for a minute there. What should you do? No, the answer is not ignore it, although that is the first tendency, of course, to do. The answer is you should apologize. Yes, and use yourself as a bad example of breaching the civility rules, and explain that it won't happen again. Yes, because we're human, and actually groups appreciate that. They understand that you're human and somebody really goaded you. Or you might just be having a bad day, for heaven's sake, right? But you need to stop being rude or uncivil, turn around, take 3 deep breaths, and explain that you had just breached the civility rules, and apologize to the person and get back your pens and stuff, right? So that you could go forward. If you do something truly egregious that can't be taken back, you're going to have to recuse yourself as leader. You can't stay. So, because you're getting paid, right, time to be polite at all times. Very important. You need to be polite at all times. That's civility rules. Civility rules are easy enough. They say, well, be nice to each other at all times, or at least civil. Mm-hmm. Yes. You're also a model of enthusiasm. And yes, this does impact the whole group dynamic to be civil, to really get the people together, enthusiasm and civility, and with the knowledge that they have a vested interest in the successful outcome. Sometimes you have a group that's very similar, and they're all, for example, one level in a corporation. They're all, I don't know, supervisors or something. And they need to do something company-wide and create policy. But they're all pretty similar to each other, maybe not physically, but in thought, indeed. And they're all pretty good at it, right? Right. And so you don't think you need the civility rules or the enthusiasm rules or any of those rules. I announce them anyway because you never know. Sometimes people go off the rails accidentally. Mm-hmm. So you need to apologize if you breach. If you've done something truly egregious, you're going to have to quit. So I think you should try to control yourself, right? All same thing for enthusiasm model. If you've truly lost enthusiasm, I recommend that you quit, that you get somebody else assigned to the group. Because you're not going to be any good to them. You don't believe in it anymore. Mm-hmm. Which leads us to the idea that we need to have some empathy. And remember that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Mm-hmm. So who should we have empathy for? How about everyone at different times and different levels, right? We've got to get along and we've got to figure out what makes us get along. And knowing each other better so that we can really, really negotiate, really network. We're going to be talking about using food as a tool if I manage to get to the recipes. A lot of times we don't quite make it because we have such a lovely conversation. But we need to get an understanding of each other. An understanding of how come you think that. And then they get the understanding about us too. And then we'll work our way towards the middle. I like to say it's a question of the 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why. The 5W questions. Who, what, where, when, and why. And the answer is, you tell me those things, I will get understanding. Mm-hmm. And who needs the understanding? Yes, your participants for the group dynamic. We need to work together. We need to make a team. And not just be a group of people that have been forced to come to this because it's part of our job, right? Yeah. Who, what, where, when, and why? How about the employer? We have to understand what the employer is trying to get at because they are our first line, who, what, where, when, and why, right? We want to know who we're working for and why they want it and all kinds of good things, the technology behind stuff, right? Who else needs empathy? It should have empathy for us too, right? It goes both ways. How about outsiders? Mm-hmm. Those people, they might or might not be opposition, but they're not exactly in our group, but they have an interest in the outcome. Yes. Outsiders are, yeah, I suppose that's true. Suki and others are saying that outsiders are kind of the wild card because that's why you need empathy and understanding of what they're doing and exactly why they're opposed. You'd be surprised. A lot of times if you have issues and especially if the opposition comes up, is formed because of your work on the issues. They weren't there before, but now they are. You'd be surprised. A lot of times you've got a lot in common and they're not really opposition. We could work together. Yes. So we want to talk to those people. How about empathy and understanding for yourself, this leader? Yeah, how about empathy and understanding for ourselves so that we can understand? Let's think about how, well, not out loud maybe, right? Let's think in private about how we feel about this group dynamic, how we feel about the situation. Is it something that we need to call in an expert for? Do we have some sort of a bias that we need to acknowledge? We're human beings. We're not perfect. Sometimes we've got some sort of a preconceived notion that we have to acknowledge and understand that we're not going to let it get in the way. That's the key to it. Because, quite frankly, sometimes we accidentally have a preference for one side or the other. And we have to think that through. You don't have to do it in front of anybody, but you do need to do it. You need to think it through and to find out what we think is really going on and to get some empathy, some understanding of the other people in your group. Yes. Yes, we need an empathy and an invitation to those who are not actually in the room but are interested. We like to call them our invisible participants. The invisible participants are impacting people in the group, are doing how far they're willing to go, and their opinions, because they're reporting to them, not necessarily physically, as in I write a piece of paper and hand it to you every time there's a meeting. But they do indeed get influenced by the invisible participants, the people who have an opinion that's very respected by your participant, but are not actually there. That's why we call them invisible, right? Right. Yeah, I know it's a little eccentric, but it tells you that you must think about them, and with the who, what, where, when, and why, we'll find out if there are any. We'll find out who it is that you respect, who it is that you're talking to, who it is that gave you that idea, right? Yes. The invisible participants are indeed a concept. You have to think about them always and make sure that you haven't injured anybody's psyche. And also, sometimes they're... Oh, this is a good question, too. People are asking how come they're invisible if they're so good at this and they've got such a big opinion and like that. The answer is a lot of times it's because they want to be anonymous. Now, we invite them into the group. We invite them to come. But a lot of times they don't want to come because they want to remain anonymous. And if somebody does that, you must respect it and not tell. Your reputation will be shot. They want to remain anonymous for a variety of reasons, mainly because for some reason they're in a good position now, but they concede that whatever it is we're trying to do would be a good idea for the future. But in case we don't make it, they don't want to have put their eggs in our basket, right? They don't want to have shown that they support it. Yes, and that's very valid. I've had some really wonderful invisible participants that have told us a lot of things that we would have found out with a great deal of research, but fill things in for us, right? Invisible participants are fabulous. Who do we also have empathy and invitation to? How about the media? Very important to have a spokesperson, somebody who is familiar with dealing with the media, who can actually present our side in a very good manner, in a very, very well-marketed manner, right? And answer questions and like that. For this, we need to have a media spokesperson. They need to be designated. They need to be able to talk to the opposition. They need to be able to talk to the media. The media makes public opinion. I don't care what anybody says, they just do. And so the media is very important to us. And they're very important to our opposition, too, because they also want the media to say nice things about them. So we have to be more appealing. We have to be, I don't want to say better exactly. People are saying better. It's been my experience that the media selects their darlings, selects who they want to kind of support by their own personal beliefs, by the beliefs of, well, they don't have an editor anymore, but by the beliefs of their audience, if they're social media, right? And by the ease of reporting. So we actually put out what used to be called a press release. We say what it is, we have the media spokesperson come and talk, and then we say what it is that we've got going and why, and we answer the who, what, where, when, and why questions. And then the media spokesperson takes all of this back and thinks about it and puts out a statement, for example. Yeah, that is appealing. Mm-hmm. Yes, fabulous. That is kind of a press release, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yes. A lot of people are asking about handheld devices and things. We have a rule, and it's kind of an important rule, that you will not report on the goings-on of the team while we're in progress, during the process. Actually, we prefer that you never do it. That's why we have a media spokesperson. And one of the things we visualize is containment, right? If we're working on something, we don't want people telling about it in the middle. That's not containment. Yeah, I know it's become kind of a dirty word in the United States because we're having funny politics. But it's important to understand that whatever is that put out into the web, whatever it is that's put out in writing will, A, stay there forever, and B, get misquoted. Because somebody's going to take the last sentence and the second sentence and glue them together. Now, is that what you said? Well, not at all in that context. And no, not next to each other, but that's what's going to happen. Is it an actual quote? It's kind of what you said. Yeah, no, don't do it. We have an actual rule about don't send out stuff, take pictures and like that. I don't care if it is Snapchat or something that's supposed to go away. No. Mm-hmm. It's not during the process, at least. Which leads us to our last statement about the process. We're going to try to do a recipe this time. Because, quite frankly, we haven't done them in like 4 weeks. I confess this. The last thing we're going to talk about is bringing in of experts. Very important. You might have the expertise within your group. You might have the expertise within your group, but some dissension, some disagreement. You need to have a third-party impartial expert, even if everybody in your group's an expert. Because everyone will walk away more satisfied like that, right? Yeah. And I actually tell my group when we're bringing in the experts so everybody can come and really hear him or her, really ask questions. Mm-hmm. Yes, an expert is somebody who has experience in the field, in my opinion. I like someone who has done it. I actually think it's quite valuable, and some of you are talking about this, to have someone who has failed because they might still be interested in helping, but you know what didn't work and why, because a lot of times hindsight will tell you why. Hey, that's valuable. So we don't waste our time doing that one, right? And we think of something else. I like to have, if it's a fairly complicated issue, I think it's good to have competition. I like competing experts. I like experts with different viewpoints so we can all hear it and we can all prevent the most dreaded of things. The most dreaded of things is unintended consequences. Ooh, yeah, unintended consequences. Ah, gee, we tore this down and that fell over and that's got termites, that kind of, but in a more, not, we don't usually do something that cut and dry to look at. But yeah, you want to be able to be the ones that tell that no, but not the one that you want to have no unintended consequences, right? So have competing experts. I like to know everything, too. Mm-hmm. So we're now going to have civility and enthusiasm, and we're going to come together as a team with consensus, and we're going to have empathy and invite our invisible participants, because we've got some, every group has some, and we're going to treat each other with respect, and we're going to visualize a reality that is successful, that really gets to our outcome in a workable, reasonable time constraint type manner so that we can go forward. My goal is always to have the group go forward without me. I've done my job. I've done my leadership. You can now go forward and really finish it off and reach success. Make whatever it is that you were headed for happen, right? Now, sometimes they keep me on because I'm kind of a good buffer in case things get kind of, we didn't understand it that way. But that's the goal, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And ladies and gentlemen, one of the ways we're going to do this is we're going to have some food. We're going to get together and do something that nobody doesn't like. We're going to have treats, right? Yeah. Now, the food is a tool. It is possible that we're hungry and it's dinner time, but the food is still a tool. It's something that we use to get people talking about whatever it, about something that isn't bothering them, something that's good, something that they want to know. My, that smells delicious. What? How did you make that? How did you learn to do it? That kind of stuff. And then we find out that we have things in common, even though we are extremely different from each other. We might be from different countries, different cultures, different religions, different backgrounds, very different than each other in real philosophical ways. But if we get together and we have some food, it keeps us in the room, for one thing. It's kind of a trick like that. And it gets us to small talk, as small talk is greatly underrated. Right? Right. How was your day? Do you have children? Are you married? That kind of stuff. People love to talk about themselves, and they love to learn about other people. And lo and behold, I had this just the other day. They find out the strangest connections. I had two people who were extremely not at all in the same circles from one another. They really were, on the surface, extremely different. They found out they had grandchildren in exactly the same school. Hey, you would have never known that if you just sat at the negotiation table. And it's bonding, right? You deal better with people that you like. Maybe you don't like them, but you deal better with people that you feel that you have something in common with, and they're human beings and not just the topic that they've taken on, not just their opinions. There's more to them than that, because you might disagree with those. So we're going to eat. We're going to hang out. We're going to make convivial, right? Right. It's one of the ways to make civility. Also, people love the party. Before we do that, we have to take a survey. Does anybody have any food prohibitions or allergies? Mm-hmm. The second thing we need to do is we need to ask people to bring a list. Not what's it called, but what's in it, so that I can run my eye down the list and find out if I can eat it or not. Right? Right. So we're finally going to do one of these. I've left enough time. Let's do the fish stew first. I think we should all have a safe recipe, which is something that everyone can eat. We took the survey, right? And is delicious and interesting, and this group can eat it, but not maybe people haven't seen it before. This is an adventure recipe. I like the safe recipe is the kind that has no surprises. Everybody's seen it before. They know exactly what it's going to, if they can eat it or not, which is why we have the list. The list tells us what's in it so that we can decide if we can eat it and if we'd like to. Mm-hmm. Let's do the fish stew. It's an adventure recipe because it has fish. A lot of people don't eat fish, and it has fish and shellfish. And also, it has white wine. Now, I don't even argue with me about the fact that the alcohol burns off. People don't like to see wine in recipes. It's just an adventure recipe. So, now we're going to start out with a whole bunch of mixed fish fillets, right? Let's have about 3 pounds at least, maybe 4. Different kinds, something that is can be cut into chunks and keep its form, something that's firm, right? Around here, haddock, bass, salmon, even though it's not, that didn't mean it to have to be white. But these fish are kind of tough. They kind of keep their form. Let's get rid of this. I have a little message here. It's like, go away. No. We're not going to update during a program. My goodness gracious. Okay, so we've got, let's do 4 pounds of that. That's not that much. And now let's have 2 pounds of shellfish. Something nice, mussels, squid. We have squid strips around here, prawns. If you're going to do shrimp like prawns and stuff like that, they need to be deveined and deshelled because you don't want people to have to fight messy with the shells, right? And we know to clean mussels and things and to throw away anything that won't open, right? We know that too, right? Okay. Let's have a couple tablespoons of oil, 2 tablespoons of butter. Do not use margarine. A nice big onion, finely chopped. A couple carrots, also finely chopped. How about same amount of celery sticks, finely chopped, right? Because it gives it a nice little color and like that, and a little deliciousness. We're going to need about 3 tablespoons of flour, just regular flour because we're going to dip things. And then let's have about 2 cups of fish stock. If you don't have fish stock, you can use chicken stock. It's delicious, too. Don't use beef stock because it's ugly. It's brown, and it won't look nice in this. Really, it's really the reason because they all taste somewhat similar. A couple cups of fish stock, and well, let's have a cup and a half, maybe even a couple cups, depending. You'll look at how much liquid you need of the white wine, right? Yes, it makes it delicious. If you don't want to use wine, you can use cider. You can use, yeah, but the wine's kind of delicious, and it gives it a little extra. And it will burn off, but this is our adventure recipe. Let's have 1 pound of those little small potatoes, the little new potatoes that we're going to have, maybe 1/4, so that they look nice, but we don't have to peel them and the whole bit, those little round ones. I think they're called new potatoes, at least 1 pound of them. I like a lot more fish than I like potatoes, come to think of it. Let's have 2/3 of a cup of heavy cream. Do not try to substitute milk. It's not going to work. It's not going to look nice. Then you can put some chopped chives and things like that on the top if you want. So we're going to take all of our fish and we're going to wash it and then dry it and bone it and like that and cut it into chunks. Sometimes the fish person, the guy that sells it to you, can do that. We're going to shell the prawns, right? Scrub the mussels and the clams, you know, do the whole bit where you throw, take the beards off and stuff like that. So everything's clean. Everything is ready now, right? Right, sitting on paper towels. Let's heat our oil and butter in a big pan. I like to use the pan I'm going to cook it in, so don't use something shallow. Add the onion and the carrot and the celery. I'd like a couple of cloves of garlic, come to think of it, too. I like garlic and everything, minced. Cook it over medium heat, begins to soften. Delicious. Yum, 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 yum. We're now going to add the flour because it makes a nice roux and mix it around. It's all hot and delicious. It smells wonderful, beginning to soften. Mm-hmm. You might as well take the pan off the stove so you don't splash yourself. And we're going to gradually stir in the fish stock and the wine. Stir, 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 kind of gradually while it's still a hot pot, and then you could kind of put it in a little faster because you don't want to splash. Or burn yourself. Stick it back over medium heat and make it come to a boil and thicken because you've got, of course, the roux in there, so then it looks really nice, right? No, you cannot add flour later. You need to do it at the time with the oil and everything. If it doesn't look like a nice roux, add another tablespoon of flour. We've got this whole thing boiling. it's nice and tasty because it has all kinds of nice things. It's got the onion and the celery and the carrots and the whole bit. And now it's got the fish stock and the wine. We notice we're not using water in this, right? Add the potatoes. Bring it back to a boil. The potatoes are smallish, but they need to simmer for about 10 minutes or 15 minutes until they're not squishy, but they're tender. You could eat them, but they're a little too hard to eat, but they're getting there, right? I think it takes about 15 minutes. Add all the fish. Stir it around. Fish cooks. Give it a few minutes. Add the shellfish because they're a little bit more delicate than the fish. Stir gently because it's all nice and thick. Put in the cream, the double cream. Bring it back to a gentle simmer, right? Cover it. And cook it through for another 5 minutes, maybe. The trick is, now it depends on the size of your shrimp. You might have needed to add them a little bit later than this because you don't want them to go rubbery. But the idea is to get all the seafood really cooked through and to make the shells pop open and like that, right? You know, to throw out unopened shells. This is delicious. It is an adventure recipe because of the fish, the shellfish, and the wine. But if everybody can eat it and they're all right with it, it's very popular. It's very good. And you can, if you do some prep and refrigerate, of course, you might even be able to make it in the room if you have the facilities. It smells fabulous. And then everybody goes, oh, we're going to have some of whatever that is because it's wonderful. My friends, we're going to get to just the one recipe. We'll do the chicken rice casserole hopefully next week. That's the safe recipe. Thank you for coming. We're out of time. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. If you would like to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website is www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.